Life Audio.
Hello, and welcome to Kainos Project.
I'm Dale.
And I am Tamara.
And we are here to help you tackle ancient truths in everyday settings. Well, it has been 8 years since the world was first introduced to Caitlyn Jenner on the cover of Vanity Fair magazine. It was in 2015 when Jenner of Olympic decathlon and Keeping Up with the Kardashians fame, depending on your age category, you'll remember Jenner from one or the other of those. Jenner came out as a trans woman, and the headline, do you remember the cover of that magazine? It said, "Call me Caitlyn."
I do.
Yeah. And at the time, this was like absolutely like it turned the world upside down. Like, this was probably the highest profile gender transition in American history at this point. And so like the country was like collectively trying to wrap their mind around the whole thing. But what's crazy about that is that things have changed since then.
Yeah.
Like those were simpler times in many ways. Like the common parlance of, you know, American life now includes not only the reality and prevalence of trans identity, but also gender fluidity, non-binary gender identity, and a slew of other terms and identity markers that are just kind of part of the nomenclature and the common understanding of the average American. And more questions about like how we as a nation are going to handle these questions of gender identity are coming to the fore, and they're really a part of our everyday conversation as a nation at this point. And so this question has been taking place in just a lot of different realms, whether that's in regard to public bathrooms and other gendered facilities. It's also increasingly becoming a conversation in sports.
Right,
like,
yeah.
Like last year, there was the major controversy with Leah Thomas, who was allowed to swim in the women's swimming team for the University of Pennsylvania. And then even just last month, a Vermont Christian high school, not even a college, a high school, was barred from participating in competitive sports in the state after the girls' basketball team. They withdrew from a tournament where a player on the opposing team was a transgender girl. And so there have been just all kinds of battles in the kind of cultural space, but also even just with regard to legislation, like gender-affirming, quote-unquote gender-affirming healthcare, which includes, you know, hormone treatments and sometimes surgical interventions. There has been legislation about whether or that can or should be administered to people who are minors or whose bodies are still developing. That's been a live debate. And there's been legislation in different states that have addressed that. And then just this past week, it's crazy because we were planning on recording this conversation a week ago, but then, you know, we came down with multiple illnesses in 1 week, and we will spare you the details on that, everybody, because it was pretty gruesome. But in the span of when we had planned to record this conversation to when we're actually recording this conversation, there's been yet another tragic mass shooting, this time in Nashville. And that case is particularly unique in that the shooter identified as a trans man, and this person apparently had some motivation against the Christian school that they attacked for their Christian beliefs and perhaps an anti-trans sentiment. And so we're going to set that conversation aside. We feel like that's an important conversation to have, and I've written on that. We'll link to that in the show notes. But what I wanted to do today, and just the slew of just all, there's a million different ways we could go with this conversation, I thought it would be helpful today to double click on one really narrow question. And I think it's a question that a lot of Christians are most readily facing in their day-to-day lives. And this is the question of, should Christians practice what is referred to as pronoun hospitality? So that's what we're going to talk about today. Should Christians practice pronoun hospitality? But we will dive into that in just a moment.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up.
We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
So this question of gender identity, it's broad, it's sweeping, it's a huge conversation with a lot of really legitimate concerns, both personally, morally, legislatively, philosophically, theologically. Particularly as it relates to how we pass on ideas about sex and gender to young people and the next generation. But today I wanted to talk about one specific question within that broader conversation, and that is this: should Christians practice pronoun hospitality? In other words, if a person requests that they be addressed by a set of pronouns that does not match their biological reality, is that something that Christians should comply with or not? And I think today what we don't necessarily want to do is to give you a definitive yes or no answer. I think even in the Christian space, this question is highly disputed, and there are people that come out on different sides of it in good faith. And so we don't necessarily want to, quote, bind your conscience and say, if you don't do it this way or that way, then you're not a good Christian. But my hope is for today is to kind of wrestle through some of the considerations to help you think through what are the different things at play, what are the different views, how have people looked at Scripture and their call to love their neighbor as themselves, and how have they wrestled through the implications of this, and you know where we lean and the different scenarios that might affect that perspective. And kind of just present that all to you for your consideration rather than say, this is what you should do or this is what you should not do necessarily.
Yeah, so the hope is to think through this and not just say, yes, you should be doing this, this is the Christian way, or no, you shouldn't be doing that because that's the Christian way, but to lean into the nuance of the conversations and the special cases that you might encounter. The reality is you can sit back and think about this from a philosophical standpoint and a theory standpoint of, if I were in this make-believe situation, here's how it should operate, and then apply that to every single situation moving forward. But life doesn't exactly work that way. There's more nuance within conversations, and I think we're living in a day and age where we don't like nuance. We like to stick to it's yes or it's no, it's black or it's white, you're on this side, you're on that side. There's really no in between. And there's a whole lot of gray in our world, and there's a whole lot of in between in our world. And especially when you have a conversation like this, that you don't have the opportunity to go to, you know, in Romans 5 verse 32, it says, do not practice pronoun hospitality, right? So
Paul would be like, pronoun what?
Yeah, like we have to.
He's like, I like hospitality, but what's that first word? Not, what are you talking about?
I don't even know what that means. Yeah. So just thinking through, what are our guardrails? What are our parameters within this conversation that we can look to Scripture to? And then how do we actually operate within our day-to-day lives, knowing there are going to be very personal situations that you may encounter? And this is something I've been thinking about even more so with having kids, because they're going to be encountering this pretty regularly. There are people in elementary school, middle school, high school who are identifying as transgender, who have expressed what they want their pronouns to be. And how do we guide our children in that way, to be the light of Christ, even in the midst of these types of situations, where yes, we understand the biological parameters of what God has put into place for humanity, but how do we still wrestle with the very real conversations happening before us? And I've found myself having these conversations with my kids far sooner than I ever thought, at least within the topical setting, because I am pregnant and Silas is often asking, like, Mommy, is Daddy pregnant? Can Daddy have a baby? And then you're like, no, only women can have babies. But obviously now with the conversation of transgender...
30 years ago, that was not a controversial statement. But now you're like, well, right. Some people think...
Yes.
But I think,
yes.
According to the Bible...
So even now, like with the conversation of transgender, it's not as black and white as it once was in terms of I could express that to my son and he very clearly knew what that meant. There was no confusion when I tell him, no... Only women can have babies, not boys. Boys can't have babies, like in terms of being pregnant. Yeah. So now, even in that conversation with Silas, who is 3, I was like, wait, how do I navigate this conversation? So,
and for the record, we did not give him a nuanced approach to the cultural realities of it. We gave him like black and white. Like this is
right. I mean, but in the back of my mind, I was thinking.
But the question is coming later.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Where. Yeah, the question is coming at some point, and I did not think I even needed to think through this type of conversation yet. But of course, yeah, like you said, we said no, only women can be pregnant and men cannot be pregnant. So no, Daddy is not pregnant. There's no baby inside of him. Only Mommy has a baby inside of her. So again, this conversation is important on a lot of different levels, and our goal is not to tell you yes or no, you need to practice pronoun hospitality, but to at least weigh into the nuance and why people land on one side or the other.
Right. So let's go through the arguments for and against, and we'll just kind of present them without any commentary. Pronouns that you should not use someone's preferred pronouns, but only the pronouns that relate to their biological reality, and then the argument for, yes, you should use the pronouns that someone prefers to have pronoun hospitality. So we'll start with the argument against pronoun hospitality first. And the argument against pronoun hospitality is actually, you know, it's pretty simple and straightforward, at least all the ones that I've seen. And it really centers on the idea that Christians should be truth tellers. Because I don't know if you knew this, Tamara, but in the Bible, it's pretty clear that lying is a sin.
What?
Yeah, and so the idea is that feeding into the lie that is part of the culture that you can determine your own pronouns, that you can determine your own gender, that is something that Christians should not participate in. And they'll often quote 1 Corinthians 13:6, which says, love does not delight in evil, but rejoices in the truth. And so the thought is that acknowledging a person's preferred pronoun may convey an implicit affirmation of the gender identity that is attached to that does not align with truth with the person's God-given biology and gender. And this has been summarized by a bunch of different people in a bunch of different ways. But one is Denny Burke, who is the professor of biblical studies at Boyce College, which is the undergrad program of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. And he's also a board member of the Council on Biblical Manhood and Womanhood. So he talks about this kind of stuff, you know, all the time. And so he wrote about this. I believe this was a number of years ago that he wrote this. But he wrote this article about it that we'll link to in the show notes. And here's some of what he says. He says, quote, truth-telling is always necessary for the Christian. We are not allowed to speak in ways that are fundamentally dishonest and that undermine the truth of God's word and how he has made us in the world. Transgender ideology is fundamentally a revolt against God's truth and encourages people, sometimes very disturbed or hurting people, to deny who God made them to be. It traps them in a way of thinking and living that is harmful to them and that alienates them from God's truth. We do not serve them or love them well by speaking as if transgender fictions are true. So loving our neighbor means telling them the truth, even when that truth brings an unpleasant confrontation. And then later down, he says, you know, he reiterates again, quote, "The practical upshot of this principle means that I must never encourage or accommodate transgender fictions with my words. In fact, I have an obligation to expose them. For me, that means that I may never refer to a biological male with pronouns that encourage him to think of himself as female. Likewise, I may never refer to a biological female with pronouns that encourage her to think of herself as male. In other words, I have to speak truthfully, and that includes the choice of the pronouns that I use," end quote. And so I said I wasn't going to give commentary. There's some language in there that he used that I would not, I would phrase it differently, but this is generally, and I think other people would phrase it differently, a little less harshly, but that's generally the argument, that if you want to be a truth teller, then you need to use people's actual pronouns rather than their preferred pronouns.
Yeah, and essentially he's saying, like, the words you speak matter. The language you decide to use in conversation matters. We can't just affirm people because that's what they want to hear and that's what they want our relationship to be, but that we have to actually care about the words that we're saying and the way that we're setting up what we believe to be true and what their preference is.
Right. So that is the argument against pronoun hospitality. So we'll now turn to the argument for pronoun hospitality, but we'll jump into that in just a moment. So the argument for pronoun hospitality, the argument for using someone's preferred pronouns. So those who advocate for pronoun hospitality, they would argue that using someone's preferred pronouns doesn't constitute a violation of truth or personal integrity. They want to frame the conversation a little bit differently than that. They would say rather indicates a willingness to accommodate for someone whose worldview is different from our own for the purpose of mission. So this view is based on the idea that language is a shared social space, in that, like, words don't belong to us. They belong in a shared common area of society. And so this argument is set forth by a guy named Gregory Coles, who's a senior research fellow at the Center for Faith, Sexuality, and Gender, which is an initiative led by Preston Sprinkle. And he wrote a paper, it's a pretty extensive paper that we'll link to in the show notes. But he argues that we need to rethink how we understand language and how it works, especially when not everybody in a community or a society agrees on the meanings of those words, or when the meanings of those words may be in transition. And that's because the meanings of words, they evolve over time. And language is not static. Just ask anybody who studied Greek, if you study classical Greek or you study first century Greek or you study modern Greek, they're three completely different languages, even though there's a lot of overlap. But that's because throughout the course of hundreds of years, language evolves. And we see this even within the last, like, 100 years in English itself.
Right. Within our own language, you can see examples of a word meaning something, like, from your parents' generation, and that's not what that word means. Like, you often hear that kind of quote of like someone's parent using a word, you're like, I don't think you understand what that word means anymore.
Right. And so if you use a word according to an old usage, then we are going to understand you using it according to its new usage. It's going to be confusing or whatnot. So just some fun examples, some non-really meaningful examples. So the word awful, it used to mean something that was awe-inspiring, but now it just means something that's bad.
Yeah, it's actually the opposite.
Right. And the word gay used to mean joyful. Now it means something a little bit different from that. The word nice used to mean foolish or unaware, and now it means something, you know, that's good. And gender pronouns, they used to refer to a person's biological reality. Now they're most commonly used in the shared social space of language to refer to how a person identifies their gender. And so that's become the standard across, you know, every major publication, even conservative publications like Fox News or Christianity Today. They keep in line with standard journalistic practices, and that is to use preferred pronouns. And so we can argue all day long that pronouns should only be used to indicate a person's biological sex, just in the same way that we could argue that the word gay should still mean happy. But the fact of the matter is that people don't use those words that way anymore. And so if we use those words that way, it can be confusing. And in the case of gender pronouns, it can actually be offensive. And so in the end, if we want to maintain, as the argument goes, if we want to maintain our missional engagement in the world, Coles, he argues that we should practice pronoun hospitality. And so we don't have to agree with the redefinition of the word in order to recognize that as a society, on the whole, that is the way that it is understood to be defined. And the reasoning behind this is another verse from 1 Corinthians 9:22, where Paul says he has become all things to all people that by all means we might save some. So those are the two arguments for pronoun hospitality, against pronoun hospitality. We haven't really given commentary, but Tamara, just listening to those, having thought through those things, as a general rule, how do you feel about pronoun hospitality? Do you have a personal conviction? What way do you lean on that?
It is interesting just being asked that question. Obviously, I knew I'd be asked this question ahead of time, but it's something else that I've been thinking through from, again, a very theoretical standpoint of listening to the two arguments and obviously really holding to the conviction of, as Christians, we have to be people of truth and we have to be people who will advocate for truth always, even if that is unfortunately doesn't make us look the best in that situation. But then when you have a very practical situation where, for example, I had met someone who, based on conversation and based on history, was born biologically as a female, but was identifying as a male. And this person introduced themselves to me, with a male name and used male pronouns for the entire conversation. At that point, having just met this person, knowing their history, I wasn't going to, in that moment, say, well, you're a she, you're not a he. It just, from that situation, I was thinking, what ground am I like holding at this point to have just met you and to now blatantly disregard everything you've shared about yourself with me, everything that you've presented yourself to be before me, based on the truth of the fact that I know you were biologically born a female. I will not address you as anything other than that, simply based on the ground of I am a truth teller.
Right.
Right.
And even in that situation where you've never met a person and you don't know, like, you might not even catch on like immediately that whatever their pronouns are or name isn't matching up to whatever their biological reality is.
Exactly. And I would hate to be wrong.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah.
If in that situation,
it's like asking someone if they're pregnant when they're not.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Is that really the water we're trying to step into as Christians, all while holding the badge of we are truth tellers, right? Because there is a lot you actually don't know about someone, and you're having to make a whole lot of assumptions of, well, like, based on how I'm looking at you and based on what you're sharing with me, I'm getting a sense that your pronouns are different than your actual biology. Like, I don't want to make a mistake in that regard.
Right. And sometimes, you know, it's fairly transparent. But in other cases, depending on how thoroughly someone has transitioned, it's not always immediate right off the bat that you know this, unless you've had prior knowledge of it. And so what you're saying is, like, there is, like, there's a little bit of complexity there. Like, to take a really hard line, I think, is sometimes a privilege of being someone who hasn't interfaced with someone who is trans or who has different pronouns or whatever it might be. Yeah, so for my part, I would generally err on the side of using whatever pronouns that they introduced themselves as, whatever first name they gave me, to refer to them in that way. I think it isn't necessarily an implicit affirmation of someone's identity or lifestyle choice for me to just extend the politeness of that. And certainly, I think in a lot of ways, in a very real sense, me using someone's preferred pronouns in a conversation with them or a conversation about them, it doesn't necessarily hurt anybody. In the same way that when we're talking about quote unquote gender affirming healthcare for minors, yeah, I'm going to be very vocal against that, especially for minors. I think as an adult, if you're past the age of 25. When your brain has had a chance to fully develop and you can make that individual choice, I mean, it's a free country and, I can advise against it, but, that's someone's individual choice. When you're talking about a 15, 16, 17-year-old who's been giving, hormone treatments and surgical interventions, I think the research is on our side. That is very harmful, and we can speak out against that. Because if we don't, and we affirmative of that, or saying well, it is what it is, that actually is harming people in very real ways and long term ways. In a way that using someone's preferred pronoun in a conversation, those are two completely different things in my mind. Those are categorically different things. Where I can hold a conversation with someone who will continue to talk to me and have a relationship with me without calling me a bigot, if I call them he instead of she or vice versa, that's different than these treatments that are going to be harmful to people.
Yeah, and I even think of the most recent event, which you referenced earlier on in today's episode, was the shooting of the school in Nashville. I've talked to a few different people who, as they're, talking about the situation, and they will often jump on you if you referred to the shooter by whichever side of the argument they're on, right? So if you said the shooter was a he, then some people are mad, and some people are mad if you said the shooter is a she. It all of a sudden draws this line of where you are in this conversation of pronoun hospitality. And if you are supporting it and you're supporting what someone wants to be referred to as, then they might be upset with you. It's so complicated now in where people stand. And now, based on how you reflect back on a situation, it actually gives insight into where you stand on pronoun hospitality.
Right. You can't even just normally converse like a regular human being on this thing that is troubling to all of us. You first have to take a side on trans identity before you can even open your mouth to the conversation. And whichever way you choose, the other side is going to jump on you, which is an unfortunate reality of the current culture war that we're in that is not seeking to further the common good, but is really creating ideological camps and shibboleths of you're in or you're out kind of a thing.
Yeah, and it's even just difficult for the sake of pure communication, right? Mm-hmm. One person saying he and one person saying she.
Another person saying they, and I'm like, are we talking about multiple people? That's a whole thing.
Where are we in this conversation? Where are we as we're reflecting back on this particular incident in our country? And now we're trying to, make arguments over something that in a lot of ways, if you look at what happened in Nashville, I do think that piece of where people are battling is pretty small in comparison to the fact that someone walked onto a school campus and shot children and adults. That's the conversation which we should be having. But now we're so sidetracked in whether or not you're going to refer to the shooter as a he or a she.
Right.
And now this is where everyone's all up in arms and everyone's feathers are ruffled. So it's just it has very real effects in our world and in our lives. And I think it is just, again, important to keep talking about it and talking about the nuance of it, but even the practical side of we're trying to have a conversation. And if you will only refer to somebody by their biological gender, and I will only refer to them by their preferred gender, like, how do we even know what we're talking about?
Right. Yeah. So it does become pretty complicated. But I think just from our conversation here, generally speaking, we're saying we don't think it's the end of the world to use someone's preferred pronoun.
Right.
Even though we might not find it ideal for the sake of having a relationship with someone or even just having a conversation with someone where we can be the light of Jesus to them. Me personally, it's not the hill I'm going to die on. But let me add a little bit more complexity to the conversation and ask you this. Like, what difference would it make in your opinion when it comes to the pronoun preferences of, say, like a child or a teen? And I'll give you two different situations. The first one is this. So let's say one of our sons, about age, 10, 12, 14, comes up to us and he tells us that his preferred pronouns are now they, them. What would your gut tell you and how to respond to that just off the bat?
I don't like your question at all, because this is, again, something that I've thought about. Like, what if one of my children come to me and have this conversation? How am I going to respond? And I'm going to be really honest with you. I'm still wrestling with that. I'm still sorting through that. My heart as a parent is to have a relationship with my sons that, one, this news would not be surprising to me, that this news would not catch me off guard, but that hopefully there were a lot of other conversations leading up to this official decision from my son that we have been engaged in, or I've been previewed to. I'm not going to pretend that I'm going to be my children's best friend their whole life, because, yeah, maybe that's not what I want either. But it just might depend on that kid, right? Like, am I going to do damage to this relationship in such a way that if I absolutely refuse to refer to them as they, them, now I have zero influence in their life. Now I have, like, they just want to end all relationship with me. I think there is an aspect of it that it very much depends on what is my relationship with that son? What kind of conversations have we had? And where are they really? Why do they want to be they, them? Like, what brought them to this point? And it is interesting because I've heard about other, like, teenagers who they're not really having much of an internal identity crisis. Their parents are like, yeah, they just said they want to be they, them today. And tomorrow they want to be him, he. Is that the right way to say?
Yeah.
And so it just...
It's more of a conversation in the previous generation. They would say, like, oh, this girl, she's kind of a tomboy.
Yes.
But now it's... Yeah. Now this girl's they, them.
Yeah. And so, you know, I think it really would depend on which son. I would love to say, here's my definite answer. Of course I would call him they, them. Of course I would refuse to call them they, them. But I think it just... There's a lot of context that needs to be had in this conversation of how I am referring to my children. And I know this is kind of different, and I guess I even hesitate to say this, but I even think of now, like, my both of the boys, like, oftentimes are playing and telling me I'm Buzz Lightyear mom, and they're very upset that I don't call them Buzz Lightyear, or they're very upset that I don't call them doggy, or whatever they are in that, like, playtime moment of pretend. And even in these moments, I'm thinking, oh, wow. Like, okay, sorry, Buzz Lightyear. Can you please go brush your teeth, Buzz Lightyear? Like, what does that hurt? And I understand this is a very different conversation, but just thinking through the reality of, like, context matters and what is actually happening in this situation with my children. My child right now does not truly believe he's Buzz Lightyear.
He just has a growing imagination.
He's just playing pretend and... Fine. Okay. Buzz Lightyear. It is bedtime, Buzz Lightyear. And he gets mad that I call him Silas until he tells me he's Silas again. Like,
he does a little spin move too.
He does. He pushes
to transition
a
out of, in and out of character.
Yeah. He, like, it pretends like he's pushing a button and then he spins around and then he says, I Silas again. Or he pushes a button and says, I Buzz Lightyear. So, like, in these moments right now, it doesn't matter. Again, I understand the conversation of pronouns is different in many ways than my son playing pretend. But I often think through what is the context of this situation and what is the very real wrestling that is happening internally with my son.
Yeah, I would, I think also my inclination, well, my inclination would be against calling my son they, them, particularly if we're talking about like a 10, 11, 12, 13 year old. But at the same time, I would also want to lead with curiosity. Like, oh, what do you mean by that? What do you mean by masculine? What do you mean by feminine? I think a lot of times in the kind of the current usage of these pronouns in Generation Z is not necessarily, like you said, around an abiding identity. It's around these culturally conceived ideas of what is masculine and what is feminine. Like, I can't even remember. I was watching a video or something, and someone was like, oh, if you cross your legs like this, that's feminine. So you're presenting feminine. I'm like, dude, I say like that all the time. Like, I don't feel like I'm a they, them, or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, it's just kind of like a, like if you play with dolls, like, that's feminine energy or whatever. And certainly there are, like, you know, axiomatic things about, you know, masculinity and femininity. But a lot of times I think there's just a lot of confusion about, like, oh, like, I like this thing that is conventionally not super manly, that that must attach to my identity in the form of my pronouns. So I'd want to, like, move through curiosity there, but I would be inclined against, just off the bat, like, to a 10, 11, 12 year old, living in my care to, like, use their preferred pronouns. I don't know. We'll see if that situation comes, like, you know, what comes of it, but definitely would want to lead with curiosity. So that's kind of the first situation. What about this one? Let's say that there's a child of a friend that has preferred pronouns outside their biological reality. Their parents seem to be on board of it. But what do you do? Do you use those preferred pronouns, even though it's this child who potentially is being raised in an environment that is maybe confusing what their gender identity is, rather than being discipled through that, I guess?
Ay, gosh, your questions are so difficult. And there's still things that I'm just constantly thinking through. Because it's a child, I think I would become more hesitant of using the preferred pronouns that they want. But it is also more difficult when you have the parents who are fully supporting that and fully on board. Like, what influence am I to now be the one who refuses to do that? Is there really any light that I'm shedding on a situation other than being the mother of their friend who just refuses to call them by what they would prefer to be called by, especially when their own parents are supporting it? So I think in that situation, I would probably lean more towards addressing that child in the preferred pronouns that they have. But honestly, I might just try and change my language to avoid the usage of pronouns to try and not create more confusion.
That's actually what I was going to say. I would probably just try not to use any pronouns to refer to them. I would just always refer to them by their first name, even though you need to get creative about your sentence structures to do that. But I would say that if the parents are Christians, particularly if they're Christians, I again would want to lead with curiosity, but then, like, talk with them about, you know, particularly if there's someone who's kind of close to me, like, how are they thinking through that? Like, what are the considerations? Like, how do they feel about that? What are their thoughts on, like, how they're using these pronouns and things like that? And I would want to, again, lead with a lot of questions. And I find a lot of times if you lead with a lot of questions with something that's kind of a little bit iffy, people will eventually talk themselves into a corner of saying, like, well, I don't know that this is the best thing. So, mm-hmm. like, and not even like a, got you kind of way, but just kind of like working it out together.
Right.
I would want to lead with not gotcha questions, but like, let's, like, just like genuine curiosity.
Oh,
like,
if there's absolutely an opportunity to engage this child, and honestly, even the parents.
That's what I'm saying. I would engage the parents rather than the child.
Yeah.
Because it's not my child.
No, but I would
maybe leave that alone, just call them their first name, and then engage the parents on, especially if we're talking about 9, 10, 11, 12-year-old.
Right, yeah. I mean, there might be opportunities to still engage the child in not very direct questions, which is like, oh, your mom told me, you know, you're going by this now. Like, when did you make that decision or something? It just depends on, again, the relationship you have. But I would likely be far more willing to engage the child, I mean, the parents in this conversation, and see what kind of relationship can be built with the child.
Yeah. Well, again, it's complicated. What about Christians and their social media profiles? Should you put your pronouns in your bio? A lot of times on Twitter, people get into an argument, and then the conservative person says, person has pronouns in the bio, don't listen to them. Should Christians put their pronouns in their bio?
This might be the most direct answer that I have on this entire episode. My thought is no.
Yeah, it's a hard pass for me.
It's no, because why do you need to? Why is that a necessary addition to your bio on social media? I think you just don't put anything, and that's fine. Just leave it that way.
Yeah, I think there's a difference between responding to the culture with kindness and kind of learning the native language of that and engaging with it in a way that's respectful. And then there's a difference between that and then actually cultivating the culture.
Yeah, and it's different when someone asks, what are your pronouns? I've been on a few meetings where that's kind of how the meeting starts. They're definitely non-like Christian meetings, right? Like they're
right.
Not within the context of the church. But the meeting will start with...
Instead of it starting with prayer, it starts with pronouns.
Exactly. What are your pronouns? And I remember first being caught off guard, like, oh, wow, like no one's ever asked me that. And I'm like, oh, well, I already know the answer. I don't understand.
What should I say?
What do I say? And so, sure, like respond with your pronouns. Like that's no big deal. But to actively put it into your social media bio, I don't think that's necessary. I think that's actually probably leaning a little bit too far into what's happening within our culture. And like you said, that's not responding to the relationships that are happening before you. That's actually engaging in the culture in a way that I don't think we're called to engage in.
Right. It's promoting the culture rather than navigating it in a way that you're like, I'm in this culture, but I'm not of this culture because, you know, I'm a citizen of the kingdom of heaven and there's a certain kind of difference there. To like just promote it, you know, with pronouns in my own bio, it's kind of like I am a full-fledged member of this culture. In a way that I don't think is super helpful. You mentioned the whole work thing. Like, so let's say, you know, it used to be work meetings would start with like name, you give your name and a fun fact about yourself. And like the fun facts are so boring. Now it's like, now everybody give your name and your pronouns. So you're saying that you don't feel squeamish about like saying like, this is my name and these are my pronouns when, you know, the Zoom circle moves around to you.
No, because my pronouns affirm my biological identity. Like it just, I'm not at odds with that. No.
Yeah, I would probably actually maybe avoid it. If everybody's like saying like, oh, my name is Bob and I identify as he, him. My name is Julie and I identify as she, her. And then it gets around to me, I'll just say I'm Dale. And.
But are you being asked what is your pronoun?
I mean, sometimes like. You
if
know,
someone directly
be.
Asked you,
but
what
if someone
your
follows
pronoun,
up
why are you
and if someone specifically asked me, like, what are your pronouns? I say, like, okay, my pronouns are he, him. But if it's just kind of the culture to present your pronouns,
oh,
I'm
no.
not going to do it.
No, yeah, I agree.
If someone explicitly asks, Dale, what are your pronouns? I'll say he, him.
If the
because
meeting,
I'm not going to fight in the middle of a work meeting.
Well, that's what
for
I was
no
thinking.
Reason.
I was like, what are you doing?
But I'm not going to, like.
Just follow the pattern that wasn't actually, like. Set up in the front end of the meeting. You're just following it now for the sake of going along. No,
unless somebody directly asked me. I mean, if someone directly asked me, because some people would say, like, even if someone directly asked you, say, like, it's not in my belief system to engage in expressing my preferred pronouns. And so they just decline to answer because they feel like that's a matter of conviction. I would just say, yeah, he, him, you know?
Right.
That's not a hill. Again, that's not a hill I'm going to die on. But I'm not going to volunteer that just for the sake of
not
appearing progressive to everybody else.
No, I agree. I thought the question was if you begin the work meeting and they say, like, share your name and your pronouns, and you're saying, I'm Dale, I'm not going to fulfill the other half of the request that you made.
I mean, I might do that. If it's like a bunch of people that do it, I'm going to say, hey, I'm Dale. And
okay.
This is my job. Yeah, and you know, because usually it'd be like your name, your pronouns, and then whatever your job is. So I would just inconspicuously just omit that unless someone follows up with them, what are your pronouns? Just because, you know, I'm not, you know, I don't want to, I'm not endorsing that culture. And if pressed, then I will give it to you, but I'm not going to be an active participant in inculcating that kind of a culture. So that would just be my thought.
That's fair. Makes sense.
So as you could tell, this is a conversation that is, it's very complicated. I mean, you can make it simple, but if you're making it simple, you're probably not like thinking super duper hard or super duper empathetically. And I don't want to sound mean about that, but if you're really thinking through like, how do I do the right thing? How do I do right by other people? Then it gets pretty complicated. And it's important to think through these things. And like we said at the top of the podcast, we aren't here to make you violate your personal convictions in this regard. But we did want to just like think through a lot of these very practical questions, which I'm sure many of you, if you haven't already interfaced with these things, they're coming. Like whether it's your kids, whether it's in a workspace, whatever it might be, this is a conversation that's active and live and it's not going away. So we wanted to just help you kind of think through what some of those considerations are. And so we would encourage you not to fault other people unnecessarily who fall in a different realm of this than you do. I mean, you can certainly be critical and say like, oh, I don't think that was the right thing. But yeah, we would encourage you to be generous in the way that and charitable in the way that you interpret other people and their practices in this regard and in the same way. That you would want them to be charitable and generous in the way that they evaluate you in whether you choose to practice pronoun hospitality or not.
Thanks for listening to the Kynos Project podcast. Thank you also to our partners at Life Audio. Visit lifeaudio.com to find dozens of other faith-centered podcasts in the network, including shows about prayer, Bible study, parenting, and more. If you enjoyed hanging out with us today, consider subscribing to the podcast and leaving a rating and review. And be sure to visit our website, kynosproject.com, for more helpful resources. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.
I found myself on a ledge, three stories high at some condominiums, contemplating my life and struggling to understand my purpose. Have you ever found yourself on the ledge? My name is Billy Ant. I'm a caring father, mentor, and friend. In my new podcast, Billy and the Goat, I share the life-changing events that shaped who I am today to remind you that no matter how far you've fallen, God can help you get up and thrive. Listen now at lifeaudio.com.